So Alan Sanaki and Maile Scott were the guiding teachers. So he was up there a lot. And I guess that's how the Catherine and do you use Kenshin or Catherine, by the way? Uh-oh. Looks like a lot of people are frozen, or just John and Catherine are frozen. There they are. Catherine, do you use Kenshin or Catherine?
Either one is fine, and I'm a little more comfortable with Catherine, actually.
Well, good, because so am I. Anyway, Catherine got to know Alan in that process and eventually started working with him and went through some process to kind of release her relationship with Shasta Abbey and formalize her teacher-student relationship with Alan, and eventually was, I guess, did you get reordained or ordained? I don't know
Yes.
how they would describe it. And then
Well, what we did was a transfer of discipleship, and I wanted to be reordained into the Suzuki Roshi lineage.
so did you sew an
So we did that.
Okesa? And then so she
Yes.
got ordained or reordained, and eventually later received Dharma transmission from Alan, and she and her partner John Mogi, who was the guy with the beard and is also a very old friend of mine. We for a while there, we were doing, he and I were doing the cooking whenever there was a Dharma transmission, and we actually had we had a good time. At any rate, Catherine received Dharma transmission, and then she and John, she had moved to Berkeley, but then she and John moved back up to Oregon, and now they live in a, I mean, I don't know if it's even a town. It's a place called Chester, Oregon, and it's west of Eugene. And it's very much in the boonies. And so Kate lives in Port Townsend, Washington. So she has interesting internet connections, the same as you guys do in Oregon. In other words, she freezes sometimes, or we freeze. So we're used to it. Anyway, they live there now, and they have a zendo and a group. It's Bird's Nest, right? Bird's Nest. Bird Haven.
Bird Haven Zendo. Yeah.
Okay, and they've been there now for quite a while, and it's a wonderful place, and I've never actually been there. When I'm there, I'm visiting on vacation, so I've never sat with them or experienced their sangha. But I know one of their students who is in Arcata, basically, and she's quite great. Anyway, so Catherine has kindly consented to give us a Dharma talk today. Thank you. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's a kind of a drizzly, rainy day here, and that's pretty much what you would expect in Western Oregon in April. Was hoping we wouldn't need to expect was this wobbly internet connection. Yet, as you can see, our internet connection wobbles. We freeze occasionally. We completely blink out. Please don't take it personally. Hopefully, we'll blink back in. In very worst case scenarios, which I really don't think will happen today, I can call back in on the phone. So, there's a plan B. You probably have experienced that in Port Townsend, Kate, in the middle of my screen. So, in the middle of the wall behind my laptop on my desk, I have posted a quote from Suzuki Roshi. And here's what it says. The most important thing about rules, but finding the true source of the teaching with your eyes and ears wherever you are. This is the direct way to know the source of the teaching. So what he's talking about is the Dharma.
Could you repeat it, Catherine? Because some of it got lost.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know. Please keep letting me know. So he said, so the most important thing is not rules, but finding the true source of the teaching with your eyes and ears, wherever you are. This is the direct way to know the source of the teaching. He's talking about the Dharma, of course. And he sometimes liked to refer to the as things as it is. Things as it is. It sounds ungrammatical, and he was ungrammatical at times, but this is a great use of ungrammar. Things, individual phenomenon, the things we contact with our sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, and so forth, and including the objects of mind, phenomena, as it is, it, which is not really an it, pointing to the undivided, formless, dynamic, continuous heart of the matter. Manifesting things that we can see with our eyes and ears. So this is the source of the Dharma. This, whatever is right in front of us, is it. So pay attention. Stay alert. Right here, right now, whatever this is a Dharma gate to the whole works. So every morning at breakfast, John and I say our meal verse. Later in the day, at lunch and dinner, we don't. We just say, itadakimasu, which means I receive. But in the morning, we do the whole thing. And the beginning of the traditional meal verse is, innumerable labors brought us this food. May we know how it comes to us. Our own Birdhaven Zendo meal verse goes into more detail. People, tools, plants, animals, turned in the wheel of living and dying. Desiring the natural order of mind, let us join our hearts with the one heart of the world, realizing the compassionate path of awakening with everyone. So lately, we've been doing this to the sound of giant machines, huge multi-ton machines cutting down all the trees in the forest behind us. All the trees. In industry parlance, that's called overstory zero. Overstory is the trees, the canopy of the trees. Zero, nothing left, taking it all. So that's what you call a clear cut. Now, there's other ways to harvest trees. Besides clear cuts. But if you want to maximize cash in hand, that's the way it's done around here. Maximizing immediate cash in hand. The trees are grown as a cash crop, and everybody needs cash. I certainly do. It has a lot to do with my breakfast. Looking deeply at my breakfast, the trees are there too. I see eggs, coffee, toast, the chickens that laid the eggs, John baking the bread, Mexican coffee farmers growing the coffee, the farm down the road that grows wheat, and holding the food. A plate, and holding the plate, a wooden table, holding me, a wooden chair, sitting on the wooden floor in our wooden house. And there was cash involved in all of that. But over story zero, that clear cut behind there, I recoil at it. It's ugly. It sounds awful. But all of my training tells me to look deeply, at clear cut, including my own dislike of it. So back to breakfast. Innumerable labors brought us this wood, this food. May we know how it comes to us. So what's going on out there? There are these huge machines. They have these big claws, sets of claws, and they grab each tree with the claws, and a saw at the bottom of the machine cuts off the tree. Close. Mary, are you not hearing me?
No, I heard you. I said, oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Under my breath.
I was afraid maybe I faded out again. So this saw cuts off the tree at the base, very close to the ground, and lifts it up a little bit. It down. Some of these trees are huge, maybe 50 feet tall. And so when they hit the ground shakes, and we feel it in the house. The house shakes a little bit. And these machines just go from tree to tree, almost like cutting hair. One hair at a time. They don't have tires. They have treads like tanks that churn up the ground. And they, in that way, destroy not just the overstory, but most of the understory as well, the smaller plants closer to the ground. So there are those incredible machines. And people operating these very sophisticated tools with a high degree of skill and precision. These are considered good jobs. They pay pretty well, and people around here like working in the woods. So people are proud of this job and of their ability to share in the cash crop and bring some cash home to support their families. And they have to be very mindful while they do this work. This is very dangerous work. Oh, I'm losing it. The name of the fit that provides for people who get injured on the job charges very high premiums for this kind of work. It's quite dangerous. So they're very mindful while they're doing this for each other, because they work in a crew. Meanwhile, what we've taken to calling the Sangha of the Woods is being disrupted, displaced, in some cases killed. All kinds of birds, squirrels, deer, monks, skunks, a flock of wild turkeys that likes to hang out back there. The coyotes that wiped out the last of our chickens and their pups that were born this spring. At least one black bear. Who knows who all else was living there. Now without their homes, without their foodways, which were all intimately woven into the place where they lived. And as I said, in some cases, without their lives. And then there are all of the soil organisms. The fungi and bacteria and worms and really a mind-boggling number of individual living beings in the soil, that layer that's at or just below the surface. This living system being squashed, cut, shoved. These multi-ton machines squeezing the air out of this living system that's called soil. And as the machines grind on, clawing and scraping their way across the hill, we begin to be able to see a house way up at the top of the hill in the trees. This is the home of our neighbor who is doing this cutting of timber, this harvest. He explained to us quite a while back that he was planning to do this because he wants to be able to contribute the money from this harvest for his grandchildren's education. That's why he's doing it, to help his grandkids get an education, go to college. And he mentioned in passing that his wife really wanted more light in their house, more sun. They were really deep in this dense forest where it's really quite dark. So I couldn't help but think, perhaps she's like some members of my own family who are vulnerable to seasonal affective disorder, SAD. And that's helped quite a bit by exposure to more light, more sun coming in the windows, more sun when you step out the door. I'm helped by that. So there she is up there, getting some more sun. And we're definitely getting more sun down here, filtering through the very thin, scraggly buffer of trees that's left between our place and the clear cut. And then noticing in another area nearby where there was some cutting, quite a bit of cutting done, that in the disturbed areas of ground that are getting more sun, what's happening this spring is a huge diversity of plants that we never saw there before. Where it's dark, rainy plants can grow. But where there's more sun, you really don't know what's going to come up. And it's been wildflower season. So all of this going on out there, and also all the while, we watch our minds, what's going on in us. At first, we were just shocked, like Mary was, when I thought maybe she was signaling me that I couldn't be heard. We knew that it was going to happen eventually. But when it was really happening, it's shocking. The work itself feels violent and destructive. And we felt loss and sadness and grief. And then we felt compassion for all the beings in the Sangha of the woods, for their suffering, their loss, the disruption of their lives, the end of some of their lives, the end of life as they knew it. And also, there was this fascination, there still is this fascination with these machines, these amazingly complex machines. I think they have little computers in them. And the very highly skilled work that's going on there. And there at times we've been like kids at a construction site. Look at that. Isn't that amazing? Here comes a big one. This growing appreciation for the people who are doing this work, and glad for them that they have these jobs, that they're doing something they're proud of, which they are. We've had conversations. John had a conversation with the guys up on the hill in this cut, and I had a conversation with some people doing a cut in another area, and they're proud of their work. It's highly skilled work. So glad for them for that. And then there's knowing that this is not the only way to harvest trees. You can harvest trees by thinning, and some people do that. So watching the arising of judgment, not the right way to do this. This is the wrong way these people are doing this. This is not the right way. This is the wrong way. They shouldn't be doing this. They don't have to do this. And looking at the slash piles as they accumulate, they are just ugly. Feeling the something like disgust arising. What was beautiful is now ugly. And then the arising of curiosity. Well, what'll it be like here next spring? Not seen before, wonderful, or at least interesting plants are going to come up here. Wanting to tramp around back there as soon as it's safe to do it, just to look. And then wondering, are they going to replant? Well, yeah, probably they are. Are they going to spray with herbicides before they replant? That's often the case. So the arising of fear of the chemicals. I've been harmed by drift from those kinds of chemicals in the past. And even more than that, fear of the difficult conversation we'll initiate with our neighbor. Fear of having to broach that subject, having to have that conversation. Fear of not having enough skill to have that conversation without creating ill will. So there's a lot going on up here. Clinging and aversion. Compassion and judgment. Curiosity and fear. And in all the while, this unfathomably vast network of causes and conditions playing out, bringing people, tools, plants, animals to just this, just this, right in front of us, right in us. Just this, touching it with our eyes and ears. Seeing the impermanence of the Sangha of the woods. Zero now. Gone. While sitting, you know, on wooden chairs at a wooden table in a wooden house built by a man named Tim who loved wood. It's easy to see that we are not separate from the ancient tangled karma that's perpetuating itself right here, right now. The clear cut and we arise together. We arise together with the clear cut. Because we arise, the clear cut arises. If the clear cut does not arise, what does that mean for us? No. But it is clear that we are arising here together. So bearing witness is really all we've managed so far. And what we have witnessed on the hill and in ourselves includes suffering, of course. But that's not all. Equally clearly, that's not all. The destruction and the loss are occurring within the same network of causes and conditions as the beneficial relationships, the relationships of neighbors and grandparents, and the living systems that support various beings in various ways. And we cannot untangle ourselves from it. And then there is the wild diversity of new growth that we can't know about. But we do know that on disturbed ground that's getting more sun, that's what's likely to happen. So all of this arising at the breakfast table. Full story that I think Mary took place at Arcata Zen Group. And it was a Sangha conversation about the environmental crisis and about the sixth great extinction that is happening right now. And people on the path of practice were trying to face the impermanence of this world as we've known it, impermanent like the Sangha of the woods, the world of the Sangha of the woods. Trying to face into the precariousness, the temporariness, the insecurity of this world that we live in, this world as we've known it. And grief and despair were gathering, hanging heavy in the room. When a visiting teacher, one of our foremothers in the Dharma, and a great teacher of your teacher, Mary, Blanche Hartman, was visiting. And things were getting very heavy and very bleak when she said in an emphatic voice, "Well, yeah, can't kill life." You can't kill life. This was grandmother wisdom. Life goes on, regardless of how you feel about it, regardless of what your fears are, regardless of your extremely limited imagination. Imagine yourself to be at the time of the dinosaurs, thinking this was the end of everything, being completely unable to imagine us. It doesn't matter. Life goes on. It's what Dogen was talking about in a fascicle that's sometimes translated as total dynamic activity, Zenki, which is Mary's Dharma name.
No, it is not.
But it might be a different Zenki?
Zenki is the
it's
key.
A different word.
The key is different. It my Dharma name is total joy.
Boy, do we need that. So this fascicle is called total dynamic activity or undivided activity or just the whole works. Pointing to something continuously functioning. Something that includes the endless unfolding of causes and conditions, the endless repetitions of arising, abiding, and passing away, again and again, arising, abiding, and passing away. That is life, not any particular birth or death. Not any particular creation or destruction, but this continuous, total dynamic working. The ongoing wholeness of life manifesting moment by moment in just this, whatever it is. This Dharma gate into the whole works. So receiving. Innumerable labors brought us all that we have. May we know how it comes to us. Receiving things as it is, sustaining our precarious, temporary, precious lives in this temporary, precarious, precious world as we've known it. May we know how it comes to us. So that's what I have to share this morning. And I would love to hear what's coming up for you. questions, comments, resonances, lacks of resonance.
Okay.
I hope I can see people's names well enough. Mary?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you see the names so you can call on people?
Yeah, I
usually
see.
People put their hands in gusho and then you can just call on them.
Okay, sounds good.
But they're shy.
I can relate. I'm shy too. John.
Yeah, I'm not quite as shy. One thing that actually you didn't kind of talk about, and it affected me a lot when I was talking with him. One of the fellows who's working back there, he's coming through. The guy is doing the cutting, and at this point, it's like all the woods were still over there, and he's just beginning a path down through the trees. And I went out to watch, and he stopped and came down, and we had a very nice conversation. But one of the things he shared with me that was very, very telling for me, and it just affected me, is he said, usually, you know, when I'm up here doing this and somebody comes up, they're usually really angry at me. And he wasn't sure, kind of like, if he stops and gets down from his machine to find out what this guy is just over on the side there doing, that, you know, I was going to start, you know, screaming at him and stuff like that. And instead, I asked him about his job and what he was doing and how he did it and all that. And it was very, very touching because it was real. It was like I wasn't involved in an abstract discussion, but there was this real guy, young, mid-30s guy who was doing his thing, and he was scared of me because people get angry at him for what he's doing. And I realized it's got to be hard to do a job like that where, you know, most of the time people are yelling at you.
Well, I think that puts us really back into the right here, right now of practice. To practice with our own fear so that we can meet others with friendliness and openness and goodwill. This is tough practice right now, especially right now in our country. Mary.
I appreciated your talking about a number of facets of this ball a lot, because I too would have been fascinated by those machines. And I like seeing the big fancy sort of hot rod cars in our 4th of July parade. You know, the kind that they like, they're low riders and then they can go up on one side, and they're all, you know, they're from the 50s, I guess, most of them, that they're beautiful, shiny, and I love them. I know they're bad. I know they're gas guzzlers, but I love them. So thank you. I felt understood, you know. And the other thing is, you remind me, after the big fire that actually did go through Tassajara and came, you know, not only very close, but, you know, through all those hills on the way in along the road, I remember I went down to help out in the kitchen right afterwards, and driving in, I just started sobbing. I had to stop because it was, you know, wrenching kind of sobbing. And at the same time, I could see the hills, and I could see like the Church Creek Trail from the road and so on. I could see the outline of the hills, and it was beautiful. It was really beautiful, you know, burned over gray and black, scarred way. It was beautiful and fascinating to see, oh, is that what it looks like? It was anyway, so that was the image that came up for me when you were talking about the clear cut and the now what's coming. And I still notice what has come since.
Ancient, tangled, isn't it?
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupted.
I just hope people will speak up. Sometimes you have to kind of wait them out. This Sangha doesn't always jump in.
Kate's jumping in.
I'm jumping in. It's nice to see you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today on these wobbly connections that we have. So I felt my heart breaking when you started to describe the clear cut, and tears welled up in my eyes. And so I appreciated you continuing to describe what else is there with the heartbreak, that it helps me to remember the families and the work and the, I mean, all of this sophisticated technology. I mean, I wouldn't be here talking to you without sophisticated technology. And it's the same technology that fuels fake news. And it's, as you said, all of it. And as Mary was talking about the machinery, I grew up near steel mills in Northwest Indiana, just east of Chicago. And there was Inland Steel and Bethlehem Steel. And my brothers worked in those mills in the summer to make money to go to college. And my father represented a couple of construction companies. And we would get these enormous inner tubes to blow up from the big wheels on those machines to use as rafts in the lake in the summertime. So it's a lot. And in our practice period this year, we studied time, Dogen's teaching on time, and it just keeps arising and abiding, passing away. So thank you for your talk this morning, and that's it.
Steve.
Hi, Catherine. I don't know if you remember me from Berkeley, but I just wanted to say hello. I was if it, just in case you don't, if it rings any bells, I was head dishwasher for a while and used to bring a guitar to skit nights with Jerry.
I remember.
I don't.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Yeah. I don't actually have any burning questions. I feel quite overwhelmed. It may have to do with the fact that I got my second shot yesterday and I kind of had to drag. I wanted to be here, so I've dragged myself over here, but I'm pretty out of it. But I did want to say hello, and I want to say that I feel like it's a really a teaching moment that to put all these things together without judgment, from the food on the table to the clear cutting to the importance of paying for your grandchildren's college maybe and doing it the wrong way, like all these things that I was quite impressed that you put them together without judgment, which on almost every step of the way I was finding myself saying, well, that's not right. Oh, I guess I understand that. Oh, and it's such this native tendency, I think. And so that's as coherent as I feel I'm going to get today, but that was what I got from it.
Well, thank you for coming day after your second shot, which can be a kind of a rough day. I want to share,
Dana.
I don't want to interrupt your sharing. I wanted to say something similar to Steve. Was as you were talking, I was deeply saddened and really felt the example of you touching on watching your mind throughout the process so that you could touch into connection and compassion. And through that, there was a thread of deep sadness, but also this kind of unfolding wisdom of the interconnectedness that I could sense as you were talking. And it helped me to feel, and it might sound weird, but maybe a bit of love in the sadness, and it made me feel deeply human. And it's so rich for me to hear you talk through the interconnectedness and the web of practice, the Dharma of the morning prayer, and to keep bringing it back as an echo. Also interesting that came to mind was the idea of the machines. And I kept thinking of Mars and how the grandmother wisdom of you can't kill life. And yet here's this little helicopter on Mars, kind of human life on freaking Mars, you know, and they're talking about putting oxygen up there. And like, it's like you say, you don't know what's going to grow when the sun, when there's more sun, and it's called ingenuity. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts, and I want to give you a heart of gratitude for sharing with us today.
Thank you for talking about love. That's really right at the heart of the matter. What I wanted to share, and I see we're well after 11, which I think is the time that you usually, 11 being the time you usually shift from, I guess, this part to more informal sharing. But someone mentioned equanimity. And as I've struggled with equanimity during this past number of years, I've developed a new mudra. It's this wide embrace to hold all of it. And it's a loving embrace. You know, just like grandmother wisdom says, you don't have to like it. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. That doesn't mean you can't embrace it all. It feels good. It opens your heart. That stretch. All right.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to...